Okay, so beware the yeast. Beware the yeast. This is a somewhat cryptic little passage because what's been happening, let me give you some context here. In the book of Mark, in Mark 7 and specifically, Jesus is going back and forth with this group called the Pharisees. And if you're not familiar with this group, this is a group of the religious upper class, the religious do-gooders, the good churchgoers. And Jesus is going back and forth with them in Mark 7. And they're like pushing him. It says they question him and they test him and they demand from him. And then finally here at the beginning of the passage, you notice he says he got in the boat to get away, to go. He's basically saying, I'm done with this. So I'm going away now. But right before he goes, he says, beware the yeast. What does he mean? And what does it have to do with sin? What does it have to do with you? Yeast. Doesn't sound like that interesting of a comment, but it's actually really, really surprising what Jesus is trying to push through this evening when he says, beware the yeast. What's the big deal? You notice he doesn't say beware of the words of the Pharisees. He doesn't say beware of the bad things the Pharisees do. He says beware of their yeast. See, well, we've been looking through the last, through the fall period at this topic of sin, with the understanding that almost everybody in the world would agree that the world is not right. It's messed up. There's suffering and there's persecution and there's oppression and there's pain and there's tragedy and there's unfairness and injustice. All of these things reign. So you have to reconcile. You have to find an answer to it. You have to know what's behind it all. And a lot of people, modern day folks, have issues with this word sin. It sounds very antiquated, the notion of sin, that there's an objective moral truth that hangs above our heads. But if you don't recognize the issue of sin, if you don't recognize sin for being what's behind all the other problems, then you have a really bad problem explaining suffering and loss and pain. Because if it's not the result of sin, then it's just dumb luck, or it's just survival of the fittest. Why do some people die and others don't? Why do some people get in trouble and other people don't? Why do some people suffer and other people don't? Why? Because the world's messed up. It's broken. And the Bible says that behind it all is this issue of sin. And here's what I've tried to do each week for you guys, for us as a community. In the New Testament especially, there's lots of places where they describe what sin is. They describe the root of it. They give what we would call the theology of sin. And I've tried to steer clear of that and rather show you the narrative of sin. And so we've looked at all these different stories, Cain and Abel, the God's people out in the wilderness complaining about not getting meat, to see what I'm calling sin in action, not just theory. And here, this group of people, these Pharisees, are coming up to Jesus as they're wont to do, and they're pushing him. And they're demanding something from him. And his last parting shot to them and then to his apostles, his last warning is beware of the yeast. As to say, you and I need to beware of the yeast as well. What is the yeast? And what's the sin? What's the sin of the Pharisees? Essentially what Jesus is doing is looking at them and saying, don't be the Pharisees. And he doesn't say, don't follow their patterns. He doesn't say, beware of their bad excuses or beware of their religion or beware. No, he says, beware of their yeast. And his apostles can't even figure it out because they think he's talking about a loaf of bread. And he just looks at them and says, do you not get it? Here's what he's saying. In order to understand what the sin is of the Pharisees, and in order for you and me to avoid it, and avoid becoming a Pharisee of our own, on our own selves, you have to know what he means by yeast, and you have to know a few things about yeast. And I know tonight you didn't want, I realize that like I'm combining theology and baking lesson, and that's probably not what you came here for. You want a good Bible story, but you got to learn a little bit. We have to study a little bit about yeast and baking. So you get baking and a theology lesson, like two for one. That's a good deal this afternoon. Why would he say yeast? Of all the things he could say, because people at this time would have hopefully gotten what he was talking about. And in order for you and me to know, we have to know about three things of what yeast does. Now, you know that I like to cook, but I don't bake. I'm horrible at baking. So I had to do some research and figure out what yeast actually does. I mean, I know about it from a chemical perspective, but you have to think and parse through. What is he saying here? Jesus is infinitely more intelligent than you and I. So we have to break down what yeast does. And essentially it does three things. It's the way the sin is operating in the hearts of the Pharisees. And the way that sin operates in you and me when we become Pharisaical. And I've said before, Jesus is more concerned with the condition of our heart rather than just the external actions. See, it's easy to say, well, look what that person's doing. That's so, they're a sinner. They're a dirty, dirty, dirty sinner. But Jesus doesn't say, don't follow their behaviors. He says, beware of their yeast. Something's inside, and it's spreading, and it's growing. And if you know anything about yeast, here's a little primer for you. Yeast, of course, if you leave it in bread too long, what does it do? It dissolves sugars, and it makes the bread sour and nasty. And Jesus is saying three things about yeast tonight that are applicable to sin, believe it or not, and are the keys for you and me avoiding the trap of these Pharisees. But we got to dig. You ready to dig? Let's dig. First, sin hides. Yeast hides. Sin spreads. Yeast spreads. And lastly, sin makes things sour, as does yeast. First, it hides. See, the interesting thing about yeast when you start to study it is that it's a bacteria, of course. We know that now. And in the old King James Version, it says, beware the leaven. Why? Because yeast makes bread grow, but you can't see it. It works on a molecular level. You can see little yeast when you put it in the water. But the way in which the chemical reaction happens is that it grows and it grows, but you can't see it. It's off the notes, behind the melody, subtle, and it creeps up on you. Look, what was the Pharisees' sin? What was their main sin? Look in verse 11. It says they came to test him. They came to question him. They came to press him. Essentially, what they're doing subtly, without even realizing, they're coming to Jesus and saying, you meet me on my terms. You dance to my tune. And Jesus just says, hey, Jesus just performed a miracle. He just fed 5,000 people. And now they're coming and they say, we want another sign and another one and another one and another one and another one. They want Jesus to dance to their tune. And it's under the guise of saying, they are just asking a question. But Jesus says, no, you're pushing me to meet your agenda, and you don't even know it. You're coming to me and saying, dance, Jesus, dance. Meet my needs. Fulfill my needs first, my desires. That's in essence what the Pharisees are saying when they're coming to test him. They're coming to prove him like you would prove yeast. See the metaphor unfolding. Essentially, the Pharisees, the main sin was when they're coming to Jesus and they're saying, not your life, my life for yours, but yours for mine. They want Jesus to bend and bow to them. Dance, Jesus, dance. It reminded me of those old, the Bugs Bunny cartoons. You can learn a lot from Looney Tunes, by the way. You know, when Bugs Bunny meets Yosemite Sam, the cartoon character, the Western guy. And what does they always do, which is so silly. Yosemite Sam always pulls out his gun, shoots at the ground, and says, dance, Bunny, dance. And then he starts dancing. Bugs Bunny will dance. You see this all the time in the cartoons. And he puts that stupid little hat on and the cane, and he goes back and forth. It's an absolute farce. It's absurd. It's Yosemite Sam saying to Bugs Bunny, you dance for me. And this is what the Pharisees are doing when they come to test him. Their yeast is so hidden, they can't even see it. They're coming to Jesus with their agenda, saying, meet me on my terms. Dance, dance to my tune. And Jesus says, I'll have none of it. Grace says, my life for yours, not yours for mine. But the Pharisees were coming to Jesus with expectations. They were coming to him saying, no, to Jesus, your life for mine. You do what I want, when I want, how I want. And he says, don't you just see, I just did all this. Nothing's going to make you happy. If you come to me, Jesus would say, with your expectations, if you come to me with Yosemite Sam faith, shooting at the ground saying, dance, 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 meet my needs first. And that's what they were doing. And it was so subtle. Because all they were doing was coming to God and saying, Jesus, and saying, do this for me, and then I'll believe you. And Jesus says, I'll have none of it. If what I've done isn't good enough for you already, you'll never be happy. You'll always want me to dance on your rhythm. It's subtle. You see, the Pharisees' sin, it wasn't overt. It wasn't that they were doing horribly, morally wrong things. Actually, they weren't. They were the religious insiders. They were the cream de la creme. They were the ones who should have understood all of it. They knew their Bible backwards and forwards. They went to church every single week. And yet they come to him and they don't have a clue what he's doing on earth. And they test him, it says. And he says, why are you demanding? And actually that word for demand, when he says, why does this generation demand a sign? It's actually a word that kind of means to push somebody, literally push them. As if you're pushing them off a cliff or to their death or something. They're pushing on him and pushing on him. And there comes another part in the Bible where they actually try to push him off a cliff. And they're saying, Jesus, you meet me where I want you to meet me. Jesus says, no, it doesn't work like that. Yeast hides. But here's the more dangerous part. Yeast spreads. See, at the time, here another lesson on yeast, baking lesson, I know. What you would do at the time is you don't use all of the yeast in the bread when you're making bread. You take a portion off and you set it aside so that you can use it. It's called the mother. So that you can keep using it over and over and over again, and you constantly take a piece off. We have it nowadays in when you make vinegar. You take wine. What do you do with it? You put bacteria in it, and there's a mother. It's called the mother. I know it's weird, but it's a little thing of bacteria that just keeps replicating over and over and over again, and it spreads, and it's evil. Look at the yeast. It's spreading, and Jesus looks at his apostles and says, you got to beware of this. You can't come to me like they are coming to me. It won't work that way. But it spreads like a cancer. And you can't ignore it. As a way to say this, yeast, when yeast is done, when the bread is done with the yeast is not done with the bread. Let me say this way. When you're done with sin, sin's not done with you. It'll tear through you and eat at you. And it'll spread and metastasize. That's how it works. That's why he's using this metaphor of yeast. Yeast doesn't stop growing. It's a bacteria that just keeps going and on and on. The mother will never stop until it dissolves and absorbs everything. To ignore it would be folly. To look at our lives and say, well, I'm not the Pharisees. Really? Maybe the yeast is hiding in your life, and maybe the yeast is spreading in your life, and you don't even know it yet, and you can't ignore it, and it'll be painful to get it out, but that's the steps we have to take. I call it here at Soul Grace being spiritually and intellectually honest with our own hearts. He's, in essence, looking at his apostles, says, beware, don't go and fall into that trap. They think they know everything. They think they have their lives together, and they're coming to me and putting their terms and conditions on me. Beware of their yeast. It will spread into you. And it'll eat you up. Don't ignore it. I debated telling the stories. Can I tell? This is going to be like a little bit of a gross story. But I figured it's a gross. Like, I don't like the human body and talking much about it. You guys kind of know it creeps me out a little bit. So, but I figured this is probably the only way you can hit home. And if you, anything, you won't ever forget this, I don't think. Some of you may remember a short while back, I was limping quite a bit, right? You remember this a while back, and there was something that was wrong with my foot. Now, my lovely wife was away on vacation for a month, and I was on my own for a month, and I chose, because I'm stubborn, and I'm Eric, not to go to the doctor. And I limped around, and I actually had to learn how to drive a car with my left foot because I couldn't even press it down. There was something in my foot. I know, gross. Isn't that gross? Sorry. It was a growth. Now, I ignored it. Did it go away? Nope. The minute that my wife got back from where she was, she said, you got to go to the doctor's for this. The minute I sat down with the doctor goes, you need to get this out of your foot. Go now. And they had to rush me into a surgery, and it was painful. A needle like this. I hate needles. I hate the hospital. I hate the human body. All this stuff is gross to me. And this needle goes into my foot, but it has to go in. It has to get it out. That's what surgery is. Now, I could look at the doctor and say, you idiot. I choose not to have you put that needle in my foot. And the doctor would go, I don't care. That's your problem. It won't go away. You can ignore it as you must, but it will spread. To your ruin, not mine, the doctor would say. It's a painful procedure, getting out the yeast. But it's a necessary one. Yeast, it hides. The sin of the Pharisees was so subtle that they wouldn't even admit it themselves, and it spreads. It's likely to contaminate the apostles, the very people. And if you look at it, the apostles are idiots. When Jesus says, beware the yeast, they go, whoa, did we forget the bread? Did we leave the grocery store without the bread? And Jesus says, you guys don't even get it. It's like it's almost they're starting to be poisoned by the stupidity of the Pharisees, almost. They had their own bouts of stupidity themselves. Yeast, it will spread. You can't ignore it. When you're done with sinning, sin is not going to be done with you. It will waylay to your life, and it'll eat at you. And if it's the sin of the Pharisees, it'll be so quiet you'll never, ever, ever see it coming. Now, sin, what, yeast, what's the last thing that yeast does? It hides, it spreads, and it dulls. You notice, you know the way yeast works. It literally eats the sugars of the bread. It literally, if you put it in wine, it eats the sugars of the wine and converts them into an acidic form. It takes the sweetness from whatever you put in it. And if you leave yeast to rise in bread for too long, you get really sour bread. What does that mean? It's a way to say that if you and I do not root out the Pharisaical sin in our life, the Yosemite Sam faith, when we go to Jesus and say, dance, Jesus, dance, meet my needs, my terms, on my conditions, that's when you're a Pharisee. And if you don't root it out, it will spread. And most importantly, it'll start to rob the sweetness. Look back at this passage. Look at this. They said, the apostle said, he has this weird thing with numbers, and I'll try to explain it this way. They're saying, we didn't bring a loaf of bread. The Pharisees are looking at him, and they don't get what he's saying either. And they're testing him and demanding from him. And Jesus says, wait a second, guys, let's go through. Let's do a math lesson. And he uses two numbers, the number 12 and the number 7. I won't bore you with all Old Testament historiology and all that stuff, but let's just say this. The number 12 and the number 7 are very, very, very good numbers in the Bible. 12 tribes of Israel. 7, the amount of time that was told that the creation came into existence. He's not just picking arbitrary numbers. Jesus doesn't do random. He's saying, when I broke those loaves, how many did you get? He said, 12. And he says, when I broke those other loaves, how many did you get? 7. He goes, dude, I'm done. Don't you get it? It's finished. It's perfect. And if you can't taste that in your life, and if you can't see that he's already done it for you, you will go sour. The yeast will spread, and it'll eat you and me up. And we'll forever be Pharisees, Jesus dance to my tune. He just met the needs of the people perfectly. 12 and 7 is a way of Jesus saying, my work here is done. It's not going to get any better than this. But what? That doesn't make them happy. They go and they demand more from him. Yeast will sour you. Sin that demands of Jesus will sour you until you realize it's finished. They wanted a leader who was powerful. He says, I already did these signs and it's still not good enough for you. Whatever will be good enough? Nothing, he would say, because it's already finished. And you and me, this is a nice story about bread in 12 and 7. What do you and I get? We get what infinitely more than a story about bread. We get the bread of life on the cross, perfectly finished. See, here's the real sin. The Pharisees were going to Jesus with their expectations of him. They were going to Jesus saying, we want you to be like this, spectacular, beautiful, powerful, magnificent. And Jesus says, I'm none of those things. I'm not that king. I'm the one you spit on. I'm the one you turn from. I'm the one that you want to ram off the cliff. Nothing that I'm doing is good enough for you because you don't realize the one thing that I did that was the best thing for you. It's good enough. Are you angry with God these days? Because he hasn't met your needs. Look at the cross. You don't get anything more. If you're angry or confused with God because he's not meeting your expectations for the way your life would work out, go to the cross. Look at it. And Jesus would say, I made 12 loaves and 7 loaves, but look at the cross. It's not even the greatest example. The story behind all stories. It's finished. And if you and I can't lean on that in our life to root out the yeast, to start saying, maybe I am like a Pharisee. Maybe, how do I get rid of this yeast for once and for all? Go to the cross. You don't get any more. I can't offer you anything more than tonight. And that's what Jesus is saying, essentially. They want another miracle and another one. They become sour and self-absorbed, and they don't realize how life really, how sweet it is. They're filled with yeast, and it's eating them up. And they're not happy. The Pharisees are never happy. They're never content in all these stories because they don't get his sweetness. They don't get that it's finished. In essence, he's saying that their lack of faith isn't his problem, it's theirs. The good news about this is that we're neither too good nor awful. Yeah, yeast will come into your life and it'll sour you. You'll become a judgmental person. You'll become a person who comes to God and wants him to dance the way you want him to. And when you do that, this, look what Jesus says. I've already done it, and nothing's good enough for you guys. Whatever will be good enough. There's nothing more than the cross. Jesus looking at you and me and saying, I died for you. I can't give anything more than that, and you don't need anything more. Now, instead of going to God and saying, God, give me a sign and then I'll believe, because that's what the Pharisees were doing. And instead of being stupid and missing the point entirely, which is what the apostles were doing, there's another person in the book of Mark who comes to Jesus, and this person gets it. And in order for you and me to not be the Pharisee and to miss the point of Jesus and his love and compassion for us, splayed out on the cross, his life given for us, in order for you and me to avoid that, look to a person in Mark chapter 7, and I didn't have the chance to read it. There's a woman who comes to Jesus. And she's a Greek woman. She's a cultural outsider. She's a religious outsider. She's a second-class citizen, being a woman. She comes to Jesus and she says, heal my daughter. And Jesus has one of the most profoundly, almost annoying things. If you read back in Mark chapter 7, he says, why would I give crumbs to dogs instead of children? Yes, he did just call her a dog. It's horrible. And she looks back at him and says, but even the dogs get leftovers. This, my friends, is one of the starkest confessions of who Jesus was, because right after this, what does Jesus say to this woman? The Syrian Phoenician woman? He says, go, she's healed. This is a woman who came to Jesus and said, yes, I am like a dog, fine. But I know you're generous enough to give even the crumbs to me, and I'll take them and I'll eat them, and that's sweet. Choose tonight the yeast of the Pharisees that will eat at you and sour you, judgment, condemnation, expectations, demanding of God, pushing him and testing him, or take the sweetness of the crumbs that he can give you that fall from the cross. And of all the people to get it, and of all the people in the Bible to really understand, it usually is the outsider. It usually is the second class citizen. It usually is the person on the outside coming to the inside. Because the people who are right next to Jesus, who should know him, they don't get him. They don't understand grace. They don't get that grace is sweet to even dogs like us. This woman heard Jesus' words and said, yeah, that's true. Spiritually speaking, I am like that. But I know, she would say, Jesus, you can give me crumbs that essentially would be sweeter than anything else I could ever put in my mouth, sweeter than all the morsels. See, the yeast of the Pharisee shows itself in a demanding, judgmental, selfish, self-absorbed heart. Beware the yeast. The woman's faith shows itself as humble, approaching Jesus, not on her terms, but begging for whatever he can give her. And Jesus nowadays would look at you and me and say, come to the cross. Even for you, there's life and it's sweet. Take it. You're neither too good for it nor too awful for it. Go in prayer now. Think through this issue of the yeast and what it means. Take hold of the cross. That's all he gives us, but it's all we need.